This is the DTV Digest, the podcast that brings you news and reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema. And now, here's your host, Mike Parkin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the DTV Digest, the podcast which brings you reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema and instead went straight to DVD, Blu-ray, and streaming media. I'm your host, Mike Parkin, and joining me tonight are Richard Hawes.
Hello, everybody.
And Stephen Lockridge.
Hello.
In tonight's show, this week's show even, we're going to kick off with a rape revenge thriller called Ravage. Then we're going to go all silency with The Bay of Silence. We're going to take a look at the fan film Star Trek First Frontier, and then on to our short shot, which this week is a pretty short No Mercy. And then we're going to end with the DTV throwback, the Tailspin. We'll get onto that one later on in the show. So without further ado, let's crack on. Awesome. Okay, in five. Our first review then is Ravage. Harper Sykes is a nature photographer working alone in the Wachitumi Valley in Virginia when she sees something she wasn't meant to. She tries to tell the authorities in town, but to no avail, and instead finds herself taken captive and brutally assaulted. However, there is more to Harper than meets the eye. Okay, me and Steve were talking about this just a little bit before we kicked off the episode, Rich. I think this is a really well-made film. I've got a sneaking suspicion they kind of ran out of bit money towards the end of it, but we'll get onto that later. But this is a brutal film. It is incredibly grim at times. And I must admit, I found myself kind of sitting on the fence with some of the protagonist's actions, shall we say. Rich, what did you think of this? Let's go over to you first.
I agree with you. Yeah, it's pretty grim stuff. It's funny because we seem to have had a lot of films of this kind lately.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the one that popped in, I mean, because of the title sounds so similar.
Yeah.
Was it Revenge? I think it's just called Revenge. Which I haven't seen, I'll hasten to add, was the one that came to mind that it looked like it could easily be confused with. But then you're watching it and you're thinking, I've got a feeling I know exactly where this is going for the most part. You're kind of like, okay, so this is a tortured heroine kind of movie, you know, it's a I spit on your grave kind of stuff. And I was like, oh, I'm not really with that, to be sure. But then you've got the resourcefulness angle, you know, where she's like quite a formidable opponent, and you get quite a lot of good fight back scenes, and then there's some revelations about her character which I quite liked. But again, it all, no matter which direction it went, it was always well-mapped territory. Yeah. As it were. And we even get a scene where she's, you know, it's what you even get the cliches of like having a conversation and then picking up a photo and it's like, oh no, that photo gives away a big twist, and it, you know, the mood suddenly changes, although you already had an idea of kind of what was going to happen. But you know, from I think on one hand you could say this is influenced by Deliverance. On the other hand, you could even say more recent films like Eden Lake. You know, it's just we've seen this film so often. I think there's some really nicely shot stuff. The soundtrack is very interesting. That's probably the most unique aspect of it. The grimness, you know, it's quite creative in its grimness. In our previous episode, we were talking about The Plagues of Breslau, and I think there's a definite similarity in some of the kill ideas in that movie.
Into what
you get in this one. So yeah, it's you know, it's kind of one of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, you know, even like Two Heads Creek, which we talked about a little while ago, you know, the idea of this whole, you know, you go to this whole area and you know, everything's against you kind of thing, but played in a completely opposite way. So
sure.
I think, you know, this will have a very particular kind of audience. You know, it's definitely not for everyone. It's not as grim as something like Hills Have Eyes Part 2, or Hills Have Eyes 2, whatever it was called, the remake recently, which was a few years ago, which I remember being really intense. But it's it gets pretty heavy at times.
Steve, what do you make of Ravage?
Yeah, I pretty much agree with what Richard said. I mean, it is beautifully shot. It looks fantastic. The only, isn't the new cliche in it where, you know, it starts off, you know what's happened, and then it goes back.
One of my bugbears, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm it's getting on my wick a bit too, that, you know what I mean? But you know, so it just kind of tells you what's going to come, to be fair. And I think what they've done is they've kind of found, I'm trying to word it so I don't spoil it, but the very last shot, I think they've come up with the idea of that and tried to work a film around it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And there's still massive, massive plot holes in it, the way I see it. And yeah, slightly annoying in that sense. But I thought she was quite, what's she called, the actress? Annabelle Dexter Jones.
Yeah.
I thought she played the part really well. The main protagonist, is it Robert Longstreet, kind of, even though I've not seen it yet, it kind of reminds me of Russell Crowe in Unhinged. If you've seen the trailer. And obviously, I think they just got the Bruce Dern in to get the financing.
Yeah, why not?
To be fair, you know, it works. Then why not? But overall, it was okay. Okay. I thought it might have been a bit more gory and grimmer in a way. Because there's only one, to me, there's only one really gory scene as such. I think there are a lot of the kills and stuff aren't overblown like they can be in this type of film.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it's vicious, but at the same time, not overly gratuitous, I think, isn't it? You
know, yeah.
It doesn't dwell on things a hell of a lot.
It's kind of the ideas, isn't it? It's the ideas that it puts in your mind.
Even the sort of, you know, the rape scene is done at a distance and sort of blurred out, but you know, you know what's happening to her, you know. But it's not sort of leering over it too much.
I'll be honest, I missed that. I didn't realise there was a rape scene.
Yeah, there was, unfortunately. So the character of Ravenna, played by Robert Longstreet, there's a moment in the film, you know, every now and again you come across a bad guy who basically thinks he's the good guy, and you actually sort of think, yeah, he's got a bit of a point of view here, actually. You know, he might be on the right track, because the way he sees it is that he's protecting this, you know, the countryside, the country he grew up in.
And everyone's livelihood.
And the reason they killed this guy that she witnessed is because, you know, he works for the oil company, and they're going to ravage the land and all this sort of stuff. And he's just out to protect what's his and his kin and all the rest of it. And I'm thinking, yeah, that's a pretty decent point. Wait a minute. He strung the guy up and had him flogged to death. You know, there comes a point in saying, yeah, we kind of had to do it. But yeah, he kind of enjoyed doing it as well, didn't you? You know, at the end of the day.
Yeah. But as well, there's that one little scene where the camera pans across and you can see all these pairs of shoes hung up.
Yeah. He's not the first.
So it's like, yeah, exactly. You know. And there's a lot of shoes there, so you know.
Yeah, he's not a nice sort of guy. Had him a lot, but he's a very interesting villain in this. You know, this sort of head of this sort of this clan, as it were. But you know, the character of Harper, I thought, was pretty good. You know, she's terrified. In the basically, her car gets sort of towed away back onto this farm. And they sort of goading her while she's inside the car, sort of saying, well, you know, when you're ready to come out and fight, you know, we're here for you, sort of thing. But I just love what she did when she did come out, you know, and I don't think anyone was expecting it. I thought that was really, really cool. And they really should have learned their lesson from that point onwards, but they don't, you know. So, she comes up with some very interesting moments, you know. The thing with the motorbike helmet, I thought was really cool.
Yeah.
But, you know, the very, very Rambo First Blood kind of thing. but it works really well. I think there is a moment in there where they sort of do the old just how badass is she sort of moment when he's sort of going on about, yeah, I looked at your Facebook page and stuff like that and I've seen where you've been and what you've been up to. But, yeah. The bit that didn't really make sense was the boyfriend bit. Unless I missed something, because they suddenly have his boyfriend, her boyfriend. It's like, how? Because she was here alone or something?
Well, they said there was a scene when she meets up with the... Well, there's a point where she meets up with another guy and he says, oh, your boyfriend came looking for you.
Oh, that was, the sheriff or something, wasn't it?
Sheriff.
Yeah. No,
I was trying to give it away.
I do like a lot of this. I don't want to sort of, we got in trouble once before about sort of talking about sort of rape revenge stuff on the old show, and I don't want to get us in trouble again. So I don't want to rank in order the rape revenge films or anything horrible like that. But I think, the character, the female protagonist is very strong. The bad guys are actually not too bad in terms of their menace and things. So, they do provide a decent menace. Bruce Dern's scenes were quite good. And then it's got this sort of interesting ending. It's one of those sort of Pyrrhic victories, isn't it? It's like, well, has she won? It's not exactly ambiguous, but it's very. It leaves you sort of quite uneasy.
That's the thing with me. To me, the ending, it's a massive plot hole to me.
Mm-hmm.
How she ended up where she was.
Yes.
Did you get all the way to the end of the credits?
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
But still.
Mm. Yeah, because that's still quite far removed from what's reported.
Well, look, if that's what's happened to her, right? How did she end up where she ended up?
Yeah, exactly.
No, I know where you're coming from.
Yeah.
Yeah? Because what he says to her when she's in the woods over the walkie-talkie is it's a 14-day hike or something.
Yeah.
To the
main road or something, yeah.
Yeah. And if she's in that kind of state that she's in, she stretches the credibility of it to me.
Yeah.
And that was the only thing I was a bit disappointed in.
I got a feeling that wraparound ending was added at the last minute. I think they did a bit of a rewrite.
Yeah.
Maybe they couldn't get a location or something, or, something happened. But, I think there's a bit of a rewrite and... sort of come into play there to sort of try and come up with an ending. It is interesting. Anyway, how are we going to score this one, guys? I'm going to go with a 7 overall.
I'm going to go a 6 on this one.
Mm-hmm.
Should mention Bruce Dern was in this and he's got a quite a good, like, basically extended cameo.
Yeah.
That was quite fun as well.
Yeah, I'm going to go 6 as well.
Okay, yeah. 2 6s and a 7 for Ravage. Cool. All right. Into Bay of Silence. Our next review is Bay of Silence. When Rosalind, a heavily pregnant woman, has an accident, it seems to trigger a psychosis within her, much to the bewilderment of her husband, Will. When a mysterious package arrives at their home, Rosalind suddenly disappears with their children and it is up to Will to discover her family's secrets. Okay. Steve, let's go straight to you for this one.
Very, very bland, I thought this was. It's so middle class and so up its own arse. There's no emotion there at all. I mean, even when the big revelation, or, you know, when he, after she goes missing and he finds her, and the big revelation comes, there's nothing there. It's obvious where it's going as soon as you walk into someone's study and something's meant. The Chekhov's gun is just there, Chekhov's dangling gun, in front of everyone, you know.
Chekhov's casting. You know,
yeah, exactly. You know it's coming. And I was just bored, to be fair. The pacing was too slow. There was no real revelation with it. And again, you're telling me 6-year-old girls don't know what's happened, or they're okay with what's happened? No. It just annoyed me.
Rich, were you annoyed by this film?
I wasn't annoyed. It was kind of a it passed the time kind of thing. I think I'm more interested in some of the aspects around the film rather than the film itself. So they got when I was watching it, it opens in the Bay of Silence in Italy.
We're in the Bay of Silence.
Yeah. And I thought that was a bit naff. It's like, well, I still don't really get the importance of that particular location, because most of the action story is about France and stuff. It's London, and they live in London and whatever. It's quite handsomely shot. It is a slow burn. There's a foreboding sense around the whole thing. Olga Kurylenko, unravels following an incident. An accident that happens at the home, and then so you kind of get one story twist, and you think you know where it's going to happen. There was we kind of almost resolved that, and then we moved on to another. Obviously, it's not a resolution; it's just sort of leading on to the next thing. So it wasn't quite the spending the whole movie searching for his wife story that I thought it was going to be. It kind of goes in a different direction, but I've never seen the lead actor plays Bang before, and I didn't even know until I was researching it that he's Danish. And I was looking at his filmography, and he was Dracula recently in the BBC, or it was BBC over here, it was Netflix, I think, in America. In that, so that's kind of raised his profile. But prior to that, he mainly worked in Danish films and stuff. So I quite liked him. I thought it was. I was very puzzled by the fact that Brian Cox wasn't playing his dad, because they look so similar.
They do. They really do. They've got the same eyebrows and everything.
Yeah. So that was a bit. Oh, okay. So he's Olga Kurylenko's character's dad or caretaker or whatever. They seem to have a very unusual relationship, which is never quite made clear. Alice Krieg's in there as well. It's an adaptation of a 1986 novel by Lisa Saint-Aubin de Taran, which doesn't seem to be in current print. And I don't know she seems to be an author with a very long list of books, so she's clearly successful. So I don't know what the book's like, and but I'm guessing there's a lot more in there that they had to kind of
cut down,
which is kind of the problem with a lot of these kind of adaptations. The director is a Dutch lady called Paula van der Oost, and I thought, all the elements are there. You know, it's solid direction, cinematography and everything, good cast. Brian Cox obviously bringing a lot to the table, even, though he's, just sort of coming in and out. I'm not surprised that it didn't take the leap to the cinema and got picked up for a more release.
I found this to be a complete misery fest, to be quite honest with you.
Again, it gets quite grim at times, doesn't it? Some of the things that happen.
It took me ages to sort of get into it, because it was all over the place. Like you say, it starts off with this sort of you know, sort of this holiday in the Bay of Silence in Italy, and then sort of jumps back to 8 months later when she's pregnant back in London. And yeah, it was confusing as to, I mean, I assume that he was remarrying and he had two, you know, the twins were from a previous marriage.
Were they? Oh, I see. I didn't get that. I didn't know.
Yeah, because he proposed to her at the in the Bay of Silence. So I think that was his second wife. But everything that happens sort of after that particular incident sort of starts pointing towards this sort of like, it's kind of supernatural tale, but then that doesn't sort of go anywhere at all. Then there's this sort of intrigue about this package that turns up, and that sort of heads out in a completely different direction. It was just weird. It was bouncing from place to place. It didn't really know, you know, what its story was, you know, for a lot of the time. And unfortunately, we're following Clay's, you know, Will, who's as in the dark as we are, basically. So he's not giving us any clues as to what's going on.
I thought it was quite funny how his wife went missing with the kids, and he was, oh, where have they gone? It's like he was investigating, but he wasn't like, where the hell is she?
Exactly.
There was no franticness to his search.
And then he does find them, and what, you know, he finds out what's happened, and he has a little cry for a minute, and then that's it. And it just didn't ring true. Any of it?
No, and he's just saying about the twins and their reaction to it all. It's like, is there something wrong with the twins? Because
exactly.
We want into The Shining.
Yeah,
there's something seriously wrong with these guys, you know. I did like its denouement. I did like that the climax. I must admit, when things all come to a head, that bit I actually did kind of enjoy. And it did sort of, you know, put a few things back in place, but overall, it didn't grip me, and then the bits that did kind of grip were just full of misery and, you know, hopelessness. Basically, it just like got to me a bit. So, scores on the doors for Bay of Silence. Rich, what are you going to score this?
Well, it's another 6 from me.
Okay, Steve?
4.
Yeah, I'm going to split the difference. I'm going to go for a 5. It is very slow paced. As you mentioned, Rich, it's very nicely shot. I think it is really the script that sort of let this down. It could be that they just sort of took too much out of the book, or it could be a case of it's just, you know, something's been lost in translation if it was originally a French novel.
No, it's actually an English novel.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Like, that doesn't even have that excuse in. But yes, okay, so we got a 4, a 5, and a 6 for Bay of Silence. Cool. On to something a bit more fun. In 5. Our next review is Star Trek First Frontier. This is the first voyage of the Starship Enterprise with its new captain, Robert April, taking command of the Starship on its first mission to stop the Sarin, a race of aliens hell-bent on destroying mankind and the galaxy as a whole. So this is a fan film, although it is a full feature, which is quite unusual. And I think for the especially for Star Trek. I think for the most part, they've done a bang-up job with this. So this is set, you know, pre-Kirk. So the uniforms look really good. The sets look really good as well. It's very much in the sort of the original Star Trek sort of mold. Where it lets itself down, unfortunately, is the sort of the hand-to-hand sort of phaser beam kind of stuff. Obviously, the budget didn't stretch that far. But I thought the story was reasonably good. They did a good handling of the new characters, and left some intrigue for, you know, if they're lucky enough to get a future episode sort of further down the line. I actually enjoyed this. Steve, what do you think?
No, I did as well. I mean, looking at it, obviously, some of the effects are very ropey, shall we say, but it kind of sticks with the spirit of the original series. I thought the script was great. I really did. It's got a better script than Star Trek Beyond, the last one.
Yes, you know, it is a proper Star. It feels like a proper Star Trek story, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you can tell it's fans who made it. The love is there. They know everything about it. Some of the performances were a little bit ropey as well. Mm. One thing that did, the only thing that kind of let it down for me was the sound quality. Because
I did find sometimes that, from scene to scene, you know, it'd go from mono to stereo as well.
Yeah, and not only that as well, there's people stood next to each other. You can hear one talking and the other guy talks. You can't hear a word he's saying. Mm-hmm. You know, a bit like that. But it was fun. It was, you know, the hearts were in the right place. They weren't trying to take the piss. It's something that these guys, I presume the big Trekkies, I think everyone involved in it must have been.
Yeah.
I thought the effects with the ships and the space battles were really good. Yeah, they were really good. I think the only effects bit that let it down, like say the phaser stuff, and also the design of the aliens as well, wasn't great, but. Yeah, I just thought the script was great. And even the performances as well, most of them.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So, Richard, are you a bit of a Star Trek fan?
I like Star Trek. I'm not a massive fan. I did really enjoy... I always liked, because I grew up in the 80s, so it was kind of the movies they were making and then into the Next Generation rather than the 60s Shatner series, so which I've never fully watched in that. But... and Voyager, Deep Space Nine, and stuff. I used to watch quite a lot. So yeah, I was very interested to check it out, and I did like it. But I'm not the intended audience, so I'm perhaps not going to enjoy it as much as some others who are going to pick up all the references and everything. But I did think for a fan film, for a film in general, really, I thought it ranked well compared to other similar kind of productions, like I'm quite well versed with Doctor Who spin-off features. This is definitely sort of in that sort of league, or a cut above that. It's not in the same realm as some of this Star Wars shorts that I've seen, where they've sort of kept their money and pointed it all in about 15-20 minutes. This has tried to tell an 80-minute story, which they did. I think it was all done Kickstarter, and that was half of the course with a lot of these things. The lead character, Captain Robert April, who is linked back into canon in, I think he originally comes from like the animated series.
All right.
Which a lot of the fan, they kind of make that, I think it's in the credits, it says, like, or somewhere that they, a lot of fans or people don't see the animated series as canon. And they were like, we really love the animated series. We want to make it, canon. So this is our sort of sense of trying to validate that. Robert Pralgo, who plays Captain Robert April, I thought was great. His character, he delivered the perfect performance, and the character is really well drawn. He's got a lot going on. He's definitely the strong anchor for the whole thing, I think, so that sort of kept me engaged and involved. There's a lot of drama unfolding alongside all the action and dealing with the aliens and stuff. So yeah, I thought this was really good. I echo the points about some of the sound quality. The alien visual effects and stuff not being so good, I can't complain. I'm great. It took them 5 years to get it made and released, and it's now freely available on YouTube, it's definitely well worth a look.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're a Star Trek fan and waiting for the new Discovery series, this is probably worth checking out. As I said, you know, they got the costumes right, they got the sets right. You know, the sort of sick bay and the bridge and things like that. It does look like the Enterprise, so you know, good on them. Character-wise, other than sort of, you know, the main captain, we don't have like a Spock figure or anything like that as such. We've got a lieutenant. Who's the pilot? She's pretty good, and they even throw in their own sort of Wesley Crusher kind of character as well, and he actually sort of proves to be quite useful. Sort of a cross between Wesley Crusher and Anton Yeltsin.
He's got a look of him, hasn't he?
Yeah, and they you know, even the sort of chief of security guy, you know, he gets some sort of good lines sort of throughout. So yeah, I thought they did quite well. And the Andoran character who turns up, the translator, communications officer. She's got her own sort of backstory, which I guess they're sort of hoping to sort of flesh out in another episode or installment.
I thought it was quite nice that they had Barry Corbin in there to offer some sort of heavyweight support. You know, he's very recognizable guy, you know, well known for like the TV series Northern Exposure, but I always remember him from War Games and stuff like that. So I mean, it was nice to have him in it. Also, there's an opening narration which is a bit shoddy, but it's done by Nichelle Nichols as Uhuru, which I thought was a nice touch.
Was it?
I didn't notice.
Okay, they credit her at the start of the movie, but yeah, she only contributes that bit. Yeah. But she has appeared in various other Star Trek fan films over the years, and so it was nice to have the sort of offering a little sort of a stamp of approval, you know, that gives it. I think
I noticed also in the credits there's a character called Harry Mudd who turns up in about two or three episodes of the original series, but I must have skipped his scene.
He's also in Discovery as well.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, he does turn up in that. okay, so this is a freebie. I think it was a bit sort of churlish of us to score it as such, but even so. Rich, how are you going to score Star Trek First Frontier?
I'm all the sixes this week. I'm going to get another six.
Okay. Steve?
Yeah, I'll give it a six.
I'm going to push to a... I was going to say six and a half. We don't do halves. So I'm going to push it up to a seven. I'm going to go for a seven for this. I must admit, when he first, you know, he's on approach to the Enterprise, I had a bit of a lump in my throat just at that moment. You know, the fact that we're going to see the inside of the Enterprise for the first time. That's really cool. Anyway, so two sixes and a seven for Star Trek First Frontier. You can find it on YouTube. In fact, we shall put a link in the footnotes, so check it out. Cool. Okay. Short, no mercy.
Yeah, but it's only about 2 weeks till Discovery comes back.
Yay. That's right, yeah. I'm just going to open up YouTube in a minute.
I used to like Enterprise, by the way. The sort of bastard series that nobody really talks about. Mm. And it tried not to be a Star Trek series, even though it was obviously a Star Trek series. I actually quite like that show.
I think I watched the first series of it and then, just couldn't really sort of get into it after that.
I never watched Enterprise, to be honest. I started Voyager, but I used to like dip in and out of them now and again, but never...
Have you seen any of Lower Decks?
No, not yet.
I'm waiting for that to come out.
Properly,
anyway. But yeah, I saw the trailer for it. It looks really funny. It's sort of a very irreverent look at Star Trek.
Which is weird. It's like they couldn't make Galaxy Quest as a Star Trek movie, and now they've done this.
I know there's a lot of hard, you know, sort of hardline Trekkies don't like it. So I've taken the preset of our favourite show.
There was an interesting credit on the fan film as well, is that they're very much behind the Orville.
Oh yeah, Orville's brilliant.
Yeah, because they were said thanks. They were like thanks to Seth MacFarlane for keeping the true spirit of Star Trek alive. It's like they don't like Discovery and stuff like that, but they do like the Orville.
Yeah, but the Orville is very good. I mean, I thought it was going to be just a fist take show, but it's not. It's actually a proper Star Trek style show.
I only watched the first one.
Oh, no, it's worth sticking with. You know, the story's actually really good, and the cast is good. Okay, how are we going to say this guy's name? I'm going for Locicero.
Hang on.
Locicero?
Locicero. Can you spell it for me? Because I haven't got it in front of me. Spell it for me.
L-O-C-I-C-E-R-O.
L-O-C-I-C-E-R-O.
Locicero?
Locicero.
Locicero. Okay, we'll go with that.
David Locicero.
David Locicero. Okay.
If that's right.
Yeah. Okay.
Is that the guy?
I think so. Locicero. Okay. In five. Our short shot this week is No Mercy. In this, an assassin enters a strip club and in short order decimates the hoodlums inside. The end. So this is literally a 4-minute fight scene from the moment she enters into this club to the point where she's sort of watching sort of ruefully the people passing by outside and thinking, ha, if only they knew what's gone on inside this building. About 4 minutes pass, basically. So this is from stunt coordinator David Locicero. Daniel Locicero. God, we were so caught up with his surname, and then I'll get his bloody first name wrong as well. So that's brilliant, isn't it? Sorry, Daniel. Daniel Locicero. And apparently they filmed this in 3 short hours. It stars Jacqueline Fernandez, who's a Sri Lankan actress who's done a lot of work in Bollywood. And they do a really good job of making this woman look like a really dangerous person to come across. Richard, over to you for this one.
Yeah, like you say, it's quite a straightforward, you know, action scene short, which we see quite a lot of. But I thought what's interesting about it is that it stars this Bollywood actress, you know, trying to stretch herself, do an English language production for a change, you know, because she's been in some big hits, you know, she's very glamorous. This is kind of a different day. It's a bit like, you know, what Megan Fox is doing now with that Rogue film, you know, to sort of change her image a bit and mix it up, you know, and Charlize Theron obviously did it way back as well. And I think it's got that, you know, CGI gunfire thing, which I'm not a fan of at all. But, you know, in terms of the choreography and that, I thought it was fine. It's interesting. You know, it shows promise. And, you know, it's a nice little calling card thing for both Daniel Locicero and Jacqueline Fernandez.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sort of a bit of a fun sort of thing to, you know, get their names out there and stuff.
Absolutely, yeah, I totally agree with that. It's very breezy, but you know it's very compelling to watch from start to finish.
I know Locicero's done quite a few shorts. You know, we've covered. He's a Frenchman, and I liken what he's doing to that Godfrey
Reichardt. Godfrey Reichardt.
Yeah, that's the guy. So you know, I mean, Godfrey's films are much better from what I've seen, you know, they're much more technically accomplished than that. But, you know, Daniel's films are worth seeing as well. And it's, you know, he's given it all and he's trying to, you know, he's working on, you know, major Pittance. Films and productions and stuff like Mission Impossible. And I don't know, he did some work on that, you know, that Rogue Warfare film.
Oh, yeah.
We looked at a while back, but, you know.
You were holding that against
list him. Of credits, but including there's like a web series and stuff called Furiously French that he's the fight choreographer on. I'm quite curious to check that out now. And that, so yeah, I like the fact, you know, when a film like this comes along and it tells you about someone you've not been familiar with, and then you go off and explore some of their other work. So yeah, that's why I think it's really nice to sort of explore these little movies.
In which case, it is virtually a calling card, as you say. You know, it's getting you interested in what they're doing, and you want to sort of find out more about them, which is perfect. Steve, how did you find this 4 minutes?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, the character was good and everything like that. obviously, quite breezy, fast-paced. Again, the only thing that annoyed me is kind of how bloodless it was. I know it sounds daft, but a man takes a point-blank bullet to the head and just lies down. There's no no bullet hole, no blood, no nothing. You know, the only bit of blood is it was when he gets stabbed in the neck at the end.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was okay. A bit too brief, really. You know, it is just one fight scene. And that's it. And the choreography is good for what it is, but I prefer something, even the shorter films, are looked at, you know, something with just slightly more depth.
I do agree with you. As a short film, considering it as a short film, I think it does sort of miss the mark a bit because, you know, there's very little in the way of story here. It is literally just a fight scene from start to finish. However, as a calling card, as a virtual sort of calling card of like, look at what we can do. And especially in the context of, we did this in 3 hours, you know, okay, they're probably prepped beforehand, but you know, we actually filmed this in three hours, you know, I think that's pretty amazing. And that, I think that speaks to the professionalism of sort of Cicero and this team and of sort of Fernandez as well. So I think on that level, it works really well. And it's something I got no issues with sort of like, you know, sort of putting on Twitter and things going, check this out, guys. I think it's really cool. So yeah, I think it works in that way. As an actual film, as a short film, I don't think it works.
No. So, I mean, it's just one fight scene. There's nothing, no build-up, no character development, nothing. It's literally just a fight scene.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, it works in that sense, but
absolutely.
No story, no nothing.
No. Yeah. And if you've watched a lot of short films, you're not really going to get anything. You know, a lot of short films of this type, of this sort of one action scene type, you're not going to get anything new. There's nothing new here, unfortunately.
No. But as a look, like you know, from Fernandez's point of view, it's like yes, I've got the moves, I can follow choreography, you know. And from Cicero's point of view, it's a case of, you know, I can put this together in short order, you know, hire me basically. I think it works on that level. But yes, so we don't score our shorts, but we'll put the link to this film in the footnotes, and we definitely think you should check it out. Awesome. Okay. On to Tailsteen. In 5. Our DTV throwback this week is Tailsteen. On board a flight to Los Angeles, a consignment of genetically engineered scorpions break free of their secure casing and start to wreak havoc on board. It is down to a sexist pilot and a plucky scientist to save the day. This isn't an asylum film, but it does kind of feel like an asylum film, Rich.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I mean, I think this is... this predates the asylum by a while, but the asylum does tread similar ground, but so have a lot. I mean, this was made around 2001, just before 2000. It was released originally in 2001, and a lot of, you know, movies set on a plane were being made like throughout the, well, ever since the 70s, really, but you know, movie stuff like from the 90s and stuff. And I think this is definitely a cut above some of what you get from The Asylum these days. I'm quite fond of this one as when it originally came out. So I'm really interested to hear how you guys found it, because I'm guessing you saw it for the first time.
Indeed. Steve, what did you make of Tailsting?
It's shit. But, no, but it's enjoyable shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's dreadful, but it's fun. You can't get over it. It's just Snakes on a Plane had no budget and just went with it as well, you know.
Yeah.
The effects are terrible.
But don't you... Don't you think it's fascinating? This was made 5 years before Snakes on a Plane, and it's basically the same movie.
Mm.
Oh yeah, yeah, I agree completely. But it's fun, you know. It's a laugh, and some of it, like the her ex, who's the doctor. He knew exactly what he was doing. He's just like this is. I'm just going over the top. I don't care.
Mm.
He knew what he was playing at. And the fact as well that the pilot gets on, walks to the cockpit, and sparks a fag up.
Yeah.
It's like what? The?
That was very strange.
I think his name's Captain Jack Russell, which made me laugh.
Yes. The opening sequence was fucking horrible.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
It was unwatchable. It was unwatchable. And I was watching it with my son, Josh, trying to introduce him to a bit more sort of, you know, scary stuff. What did surprise me was the size of the scorpions. You know, because I was thinking in terms of like Snakes on the Plane. So I was thinking like, you know, so maybe sort of normal sized scorpions, which is sort of, you know, going to sort of like, multiply or something, but no, these are giant fuck off scorpions. They're sort of, you know, yeah. It's like, well, where are they hiding these things?
Well, it's like Godzilla hides in New York in the Emmerich movie, you know.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you know, suddenly jump out from the luggage compartment and things. But yeah, I mean, it was enjoyable sort of watching the cast get, you know, get whittled down. I have to admit, certain characters certainly deserved it. So there was that, you know, there's a sort of moment of sort of racial profiling going on with the two Arab guys, you know.
That was
quite embarrassing, but yeah, and sort of, you know, the just all these sort of sexist comments from the sort of the guy who's supposed to be the hero, you know, so, but you're a girl, how could you be a scientist, you know, that is that sort of thing. Going on a lot as well, which is quite amusing. Yeah, it wasn't too bad overall.
What I like about it is I think it's got an interesting tone, because it's almost like it feels like it's serious, but then it's not, because it throws in a joke or it does something silly. So it's not full on comedy, but it's very light-hearted. So it strikes a really nice balance. I thought of it, sort of, you know, you can play it and you're like, hang on a minute, this seems a bit too off, you know, offbeat to be serious. But then you think, well, of course it's not taking itself seriously. It's about giant genetically engineered scorpions.
Giant scorpions on a motherfucking plane.
Yeah. Big rubber scorpions, I should say.
Yeah, so I can't, you know, I watched it a week ago and I can hardly remember anything about it. Other than that really horrible opening, and the fact that all the scorpions seem to go away for a while and we end up with sort of back to a human threat for a big portion of the film, which was kind of, and the guy suddenly has got perfect aim with a gun that he's never used before.
Oh, that's all the sort of thing. Come on, the guy has, there's so much crazy stuff in this movie. They make a, I mean, the whole last part of the movie is basically aliens on no budget.
Yeah.
With the heroine wearing a suit to try and battle the alien. And unfortunately, it looks like they ran out of money, because they kind of... She has this battle with the scorpion, but then you're like, so is that it? Oh, okay. Then they come in and go, is it dead? Yeah. Like, I thought we were going to see it explode or something. Yeah, like, no, we're not going to get that.
Yeah.
But, you know, you've got the cabin pressure going in the plane and stuff, but and all that sort of stuff, which is quite well done, and the scorpions are
being sort of pulled out the door. I thought the hero, the guy, the sort of anti-hero guy, Jack Russell, he looked a bit like Sam Jones to me in some of the scenes.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, quite a good presence. Mm-hmm. The heroine was, again, everyone in this, let's say again, everyone in this movie sort of reminds me of a more well-known performer. Like the guy playing the sleazy scientist guy who's the human villain of the piece, he looks like another guy whose name I don't know, is like a familiar face character actor, who I wish I could quote, but he kind of looks like somebody, you know, in bigger budget movies. The heroine, she kind of looks like Judy Greer. And I sort of thought to myself, you know, oh, you could imagine a big budget movie of this. And it was like, well, yeah, there was a big budget movie of this.
Yeah.
It was based on a plane. Yeah. Which is, you know, I don't know if it's intentional or not, or whatever, but, you know, some of the scenes, I mean, like the young couple who go off to the toilet.
Oh, yeah.
The scene is exactly the same.
Yeah.
Basically, but with scorpions. And I thought the scorpions were quite fun. You know, rubbery scorpions. At the end of on the end credits, it says no fat, hairy scorpions were harmed in the shooting of this movie, which I thought summed it up quite nicely. I last saw it 20 years ago almost, you know, because it came out over here 2002 on a third millennium. I think it was one of the last films to get a VHS as well as DVD release. Oh. I'm not sure when that stopped, but it must have been somewhere in the early 2000s. And something I hadn't something I learned this time, which I didn't know at the time, was that one of those Arab illegal immigrants on the plane is played by a Bollywood actor called Gulshan Grover, and this is one of a handful of films he made in America before basically giving up and, you know, saying I'm just going to stick to working in India. He's made over 400 films. And he recently released his autobiography. He plays bad guys normally. Yeah. He's a villain, but the first thing he did in America was the second Jungle Book, the DTV sequel to the Scott Lee movie, and then he did this, and then he did, funnily enough, another airplane movie, which was with Christina Loken in, called Air Panic, which I think was shot in India. And then I think he might have done one or two other things, but yeah, so I kind of get. So this film is kind of more interesting as a curious footnote in the filmography of like this
other actors,
this huge actor from another country, and its relation to Snakes on a Plane than the actual film itself. But I think, you know, it's still quite fun, and you know, I'll be honest, it's not the kind of film that I keep my eyes on all the time. You know, I'm doing other stuff and whatever. But I think if you came in from the pub or you know, or if you, well, 10 o'clock, if, depending on, you know, if the pub's kicked out at 10 o'clock, the time of year we've got now, and you're headed home and you stuck this on with a few cans next year, I think you'd have quite a good time.
Yeah. Yeah, my son found it quite... inoffensive, didn't worry him too much, so that was a plus, getting him sort of into a bit more sort of creature feature kind of things. So yeah, we don't score the DTV throwbacks, as you know, but we will put a link to the trailer into the footnotes, so check that out, and you can also find it on Amazon Prime. So if you are a subscriber to Amazon Prime, then check out Tailsting. And that's the end of this week's show. So thank you for listening. Thank you to Steve and Rich for joining me.
No problem, Zolta.
Yeah. Do check out the footnotes. We have the link to No Mercy and the trailers for the other films and the full feature of Star Trek First Frontier, which you can find on YouTube. So please check those out. You can find us on Twitter at the DTV... You can find us on Twitter at the DTV Digest and also on Facebook, the DTV Digest as well. You can also get us via email if you so wish, the DTV Digest at hotmail.com.
No, it's hotmail? Gmail.com.
Gmail.com. Gmail.com. Don't send anything to hotmail.com, please. So yes, thank you for listening and tune in again next time. Cool. Cool. Rich, have you heard of a film called The Bloodstone?
I think that's the one we didn't we talk about that a few weeks ago. It's like got a Bollywood actor in it, but it was, and it's on Arrow. Did you say?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
yeah.
It's an interesting one.
Old one.
Which one?
Hang on, isn't it a bit like an Indiana Jones type film?
That's the one. Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck, I remember watching that when I was a kid.
What's interesting? It, you know, I quite enjoyed it. It reminded me of that other one we did, Coronado.
Yeah, Coronado.
Yeah, but what was interesting about this one is that the main hero, his voice apparently was considered too weedy for the character, so they got David Soul to redub him, which is quite interesting. It's like the opposite of Sam Jones and Flash Gordon. It's like your voice is too manly.
No, but. Do you listen to the Kermode on Film podcast?
Which one?
Kermode on Film.
No.
There's a big this week's. It's like an hour long interview with Mike Hodges about Flash Gordon.
All right.
And he brings it up the rumor that Sam Jones was dubbed for Flash. He says Mike Hodges said no, he wasn't. There was a couple of bits of ADR.
All right.
Because they'd fallen out. At the end of the film, and Sam Jones turns to a bit of a dickhead, apparently. Got a bit too big for his boots and wouldn't come back and do anything.
I think the rumour came about was because Sam Jones did a Glenn A. Larson series called The Highwayman, which is basically Knight Rider, but he's driving a big-ass truck, which the front part lifts off to become a helicopter.
Yeah. I desperately want to watch it again. I've been really trying to find it. You can't really get it anywhere. It's like, I'd love to see it again.
It was really good. I think it lasted like half a season or something.
Yeah, it got cancelled quite early.
Sam Jones' voice in that is really deep. You know, he's got a really deep voice. And everyone's watching it going, hang on. that series had a really good, sidekick called Zamo or something, or this sort of Australian character.
I was just going to say, he's played a character called, I think, what is the character? Yeah, Jeffo.
Jeffo,
a guy called Mark Jacko Jackson.
Yeah.
And there's another, I've thought of him again recently because a film came on Prime with Jacko Jackson in it that I want to watch at some point called Bullet Down Under.
All right.
It's about a cop called Jack Morgan, who goes to Australia because I don't know, things get too hot in America, and then you know he gets in trouble in Australia. A bit like a Hurricane Smith kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like with Carl Weathers. Mm. So yeah, I've got that on my list as a potential throwback. It's never actually been released before over here.
No. That reminds me of another film that's come. Well, hopefully, it's coming out next year, called *The Mongolian Connection*. It's about an FBI agent who has to go to Mongolia with a suspect. You know, hand them back over to them, sort of thing. That's very, very good, but it hasn't been picked
up. Seen it?
Yeah, I've seen it. It did a couple of sort of virtual film festivals.
But, from? Kazakhstan or something, is it?
It's an American film. It's an American film. But
This is Mongolian on IMDb.
All right. Yeah, it's seems to be sort of a lot of it shot in the US.
Oh, right. Okay.
But very good. Yeah, it's a while ago, but I'm still waiting for it to come out.
Yeah, I'd like to see that if it comes. Definitely.
So I'm just trying to think. Has anyone sort of watched any of the other sort of films that we've got lined up? I still haven't seen Legacy of Lies yet.
No, the other ones I've had, listed to me was what we've done tonight, really.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I haven't really had a chance, but I will be sending out. I mean, I've basically... We've never been in this position before, but we've basically got enough screeners for the whole of October.
Yeah.
So we're in a really healthy position at the moment.
A lot of stuff at the moment. Yeah, we're picking up you know, the film companies seem to like us at the moment because of what the stuff we're putting out. I got some other stuff sort of lined up. Did you see, Rich, the that other short I sent you or linked to you on Twitter?
I did see you'd linked me one. I've written it down. Companion Shot.
Yeah. It's basically like a comedy sketch from like you could almost imagine it being part of like Little Britain or French and Saunders or something, but it's pretty decent.
Do you, if you want to cover that, I've
not quite. it's ageist, if anything, but it's quite amazing. Yeah, I quite liked it.
I've put it in my draft schedule for doing on episode 127. Okay. You know, the one after next, because I've put the Speed of Time in with John Hannigan.
Oh yeah,
the next one. And if you want, I mean, I've got a plan of stuff. Do you want me to tell you what I've sort of got down for next week? See what you think.
Okay, what do you reckon?
So, Legacy of Lies.
Yeah.
Alien Addiction.
Oh yeah.
Which you've had for a while, which is coming out around that time, so I thought we'd better get to that.
I'm glad you reminded me of that, because I've got to actually sort of write up the review.
There's a high five release called 1918, The Battle of Kruti, which is a Ukrainian war film.
Right.
I'm trying to get The Driver with Mark Dacascos.
Hmm.
So if we get that, that's four films.
Yeah.
Speed of Time for The Short Shot. And for The Throwback, I was thinking, could we possibly do the Philadelphia Experiment 2?
Yeah, why not?
I really fancy revisiting that.
I remember
it coming out, but I never watched it.
I've never seen it, I must admit. I had an interesting one this week. I was sort of speaking to a couple of guys on Twitter, and they're talking about a Mark L. Lester film called Stealing Candy.
Mm, with Coolio, yeah.
Coolio, yeah, and I'd never even heard of it. So I looked it up on Amazon, and they had a copy for like £1. So I ordered it. I watched that last night. So that's a freaky little film. So it's about this actress who she gets kidnapped by these three guys, basically, and they take her to this secluded cabin. And instead of holding her for ransom, they force her to have sex on camera, and then they're going to set up a website. It's like pay-per-view thing, because she's a sort of, you know, reasonably famous actress, and do it like a pay-per-view event, and it was just really, really sort of quite twisted.
So how do they handle that material?
Mm-hmm.
Is that because it sounds a bit, you know, like well, it's very bad, basically.
Rapey.
Very, very, very,
rapey. Yeah. It is. Well, you know, they threaten it, basically say, well, you know, we know you know her dad's in like a hospital, that sort of thing, and so, well, we've planted a guy in there, he'll kill your dad if you don't behave, and all this sort of stuff. But it's got a few twists to it. But you know, there is this sort of central scene where she has to sort of act as if this is something she wants to do and all that, which is sort of kind of freaky. But yeah, it's definitely a bit of an anomaly in Mark L. Lester's filmography, I think. But it's almost like a made-for-cable movie.
Yeah. Was it out of a random thing? Is it a Mosaic DVD? Was that?
Yes. I think it is.
Yeah, I thought it was.
Yeah. But yeah, you could almost sort of see it being on Cinemax or HBO, basically.
Yeah, there was quite a lot of films of that sort of, again... Mm. It's kind of its time, you know. You don't see
2005.
Like,
you know, I mean, it'd be pretty redundant now because it's like, well, Pornhub. Yeah. You know, these guys make like sort of $12 million out of this scheme of theirs. It's like, yeah, it's not going to happen. People aren't going to be that interested. But
in the future,
would
it be okay if I suggested some?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Please do.
I've been trying to think of some. I don't know if they're readily available. That's the point.
Mm. If you want to throw out some titles, I'm always happy to, you know, do the research side.
Yeah, you'd be surprised what turns up on Amazon Prime as well.
That's what I mean. Yeah, I keep meaning to have a look through it, but it's not actually my account. It's my mate's.
fair.
they use my Netflix. We right. use their Prime. So. Oh,
fair enough. Yeah. So why is my browser history full of all these B movies? What's going on?
Well, it's not like the other day me and Mrs. were looking and she said, oh, Cobra Kai's on. I'll have a quick look. I pressed play and I thought, hang on, something's not right here. And it was on season 2, episode 5.
Oh, right. Because he's already
halfway been watching through. It. Yeah.
Why doesn't he? You can create another profile, can't you? And use your own profile.
No, they just use mine or whoever's.
On Netflix, you can have up to 4 different profiles.
Yeah, just get a different profile.
There's 5 of us
on Amazon.
House.
You can't do that. Amazon, you can't. But Netflix, you can. Yeah.
There's 5 of us. You see, so we've got 5 set up for each one of us.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
So. Actually, I think Amazon's changed. I think they do have up to three accounts now on Amazon.
Is it? Oh, Amazon.
I think so. Yeah, it usually comes up with a screen before I go into it.
I'm the only one who uses it, so I don't need to. But
I just use it on my phone. To be fair, now
I'm just working my way through the professionals at the moment on Amazon.
The original?
Yeah. I've just started season 3 now.
Cool.
It's damn good. It really is. It's really worth seeing.
I think is it remastered online or is it remastered on disc that it's coming out?
They've released it on Blu-ray on, you know, sort of remastered, but the ones on Amazon are remastered, although it's in the original sort of TV aspect ratio. But they're very good prints. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm still the only thing I really watch on Prime. Apart from throwbacks, is The Boys, really.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I still haven't finished season 1 yet.
I'm not watching season 2 yet because I'm waiting for all the episodes to be available so I can just go for it.
Yeah,
can't wait.
I've not watched
this week's yet, but I'm more or less up to date on it.
Is it good so far, Steve?
Yeah, it is really good, yeah.
Right, yeah.
Cool. All right, guys, I'm going to call it a night.
Yep, I'm going to finish this beer and go get in bed, I think.
Okay.
Right, I'm just going to stop recording.